Welcome to The Mindful Dog Parent, the podcast for overwhelmed and anxious dog owners who are doing their best but still feel like they're getting it all wrong. I'm Sian, a trauma-informed coach and ethical dog trainer. I created this podcast because dog parenting isn't always cute reels and perfect walks. Sometimes it's tears after training, guilt in the quiet moments, or just feeling like you're the only one struggling. If you've ever said, I love my dog, but this is really hard, you're in the right place. Each week, I'll bring you calm, compassionate guidance to help you build confidence, regulate your emotions, and reconnect with your dog, even when things feel messy. Because you're not failing, you're just overwhelmed, and you don't have to figure this out on your own. Hi, welcome back to The Mindful Dog Parent. I am Sian and I'm really, really glad that you're here with me today. Now, I want to start with something I think you've probably noticed, maybe without having the words for it. You're about to go on a walk, and before you've even left the house, something shifts. You might find yourself like mentally rehearsing what might go wrong, who you might encounter on the walk, which part of the route's going to be the problem today. And without meaning to, you are arriving at that front door already tense. And your dog, who's been watching you get ready, is potentially going to pick up on that. So their tail might be up, they are scanning the environment before you've even reached the end of the path. They're alert in a way that they maybe weren't 5 minutes ago. And then something does happen. When a dog appears or a chigger shows up, part of you is wondering, did I do that? Did my anxiety just make that worse? The answer is sometimes, but not in the way that you might fear. Not because you're failing your dog. Not because you're doing things wrong. Not because you are to blame because your dog is reacting in this way. Absolutely none of those things. But it's because you're connected to them, and that connection works in both directions, which is actually the most hopeful thing that I'm going to tell you today in this episode. I want to explain what co-regulation, if I can say the word, actually is properly, what it is, how it works in both directions, and what you can genuinely do with that knowledge to change what happens between you and your dog. Co-regulation is one of those terms that just gets used so many times in lots of nervous system circles. A lot of the time, we're talking about it from a parent-child perspective, but I want to explain what it actually means in the context of you and your dog, because I think the full picture is more useful and very much more hopeful than most people realise. So at the most basic level, co-regulation is a term that means that our nervous system is influencing one another. Not through words or cues, with like training cues with your dog, or conscious communication, but through sheer presence. So just being present, through proximity, being close to your dog, through the signals that our bodies are sending out continuously. So our breath is going to be a signal from our nervous system. Our posture is going to be a signal. Our heart rate, our muscle tension, our general energy. And it's not a metaphor. This is all a physiological process. So mammals, including dogs and humans, have got nervous systems that are fundamentally social. We evolved to co-regulate with each other. That is where it's all come from. To use the presence of calm, safe, calm and safe as a presence from another person to help our own nervous system settle. To use the alertness of another person to prime our own threat detection. We do it with other people all the time. Genuinely, we're mostly doing it without even noticing. So that's what makes it really difficult. With dogs, this process is so powerful for quite a few reasons. So dogs have been living alongside humans for thousands of years. They've evolved to read us with so much extraordinary precision. Our facial expressions, our gaze, our tone of voice, our body language, our smell even. you know, there's scent detection dogs, there's medical detection dogs that sense the changes in our chemical balance. Like, there's so much going on there. And research from Queen's University Belfast has found that dogs can even detect changes in human stress hormones through scent. They can literally smell when we're under pressure, when we're feeling that stress. So when you're anxious on a walk, so when your shoulders are raised up to your ears, you're breathing shallow, the grip on that lead is really tight, and you're not going to be aware that you're doing this half the time. Your dog is not just vaguely picking up on your mood. They're not saying, oh, you know, not sure, but just carrying on anyway. They're receiving a stream of detailed physiological information that their nervous system's actively going to be processing. And all this is happening automatically in the background. And that information is going to shape their own nervous system response. And it works both ways. So the same thing is happening from your dog to you. So if what they find in you is something's changed, the energy's different, their nervous system is going to respond accordingly. Not because they're being difficult, because that is exactly what co-regulation is. It's your nervous system's doing exactly what they're designed to do together. They're social. Our nervous systems haven't evolved to be anything different. They are basing it on what others are telling them, and it helps in those fight, flight, freeze moments. But, and this is the part that I really want you to take in, it works in the other direction too. And I'm going to say it again because I've already said it once. A regulated nervous system is just as contagious as a dysregulated one. When you are genuinely feeling present and calm, not trying to pretend to be calm, not trying to fake it till you make it, not trying to like appear one way on the outside, but like a swan where like they're paddling their feet under the water, but they just seem really graceful on top of the water. Not doing any of that stuff, not trying to push through and say, well, I just got to be calm 100% of the time. I've been the person that felt like this when I first started my nervous system work on myself. As a perfectionist, as a recovering perfectionist, I was somebody who said, I have to be calm 100% of the time or it's not working. And then I realised that is just totally impossible. That is never going to work. And I'm never going to get anywhere if I think that that's the case. So I've been down that road myself, and I've realised through my past kind of efforts to try to be calm all the time and regulate myself all the time, that that just isn't the case. So when I say when you're genuinely calm and present, that transmits to your dog, this is actually saying sometimes you are going to be stressed, sometimes you are going to be frustrated, sometimes you're going to feel all the big emotions, and you've got all that emotional weight from work and life and family and friends and like all the things going on. It doesn't mean you have to try and pretend or make yourself be calm because your dog's gonna pick up on that calm. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. This isn't going to override everything, and it doesn't work every single time. So especially with a dog whose stress book is already full, but it is a real physiological influence. So sometimes you could be coming from a calm place, but your dog's still kind of going absolutely mad at the end of that lead at another dog over the road. And you're thinking, well, I am actually quite calm right now, so why is my dog still doing all this stuff? It's one part to the picture, and it doesn't always have an influence because your dog has their own story, their own situation, their own stress bucket going on separately to yours there as well. So this is where it works hand in hand. Over time, consistent co-regulation in the calm direction starts to change that baseline that I always talk about. So baseline is, I've talked about in previous episodes, what is baseline? Everybody has a different baseline. Every dog has a different baseline. If we can just understand what that looks like and start to help our dogs come back to a better place, that baseline is going to be much calmer than potentially being wired 80% of the time as it might be currently. So the baseline is coming back to a place of consistency with an emotion. So I want to describe what the co-regulation loop actually looks like in practice, because I think it really helps to see it clearly before you can start working with it. I really, really want to be clear before I describe this. I am not telling you this to add to your load. Understanding the loop isn't about blame, it's about agency. It's about feeling empowered, because I always say, like, again, I've been somebody that's done this. Understanding is one step. Awareness is one step. It's the first step. Then what do we do? And I'm going to talk through what we do with that. So knowing how it works is what gives you something useful to put you, like, somewhere useful to put your energy. So the escalating version, so the one that we don't want to happen. So you spot a trigger, your nervous system activates, so your shoulders go up, your breathing's, like, you're holding your breath, your breathing's changed, your grip's tightened on the lead, and you've probably kind of made the dog's lead tense through that. Your dog, so who's been reading you constantly without you even potentially even looking at each other, registers that change. Their nervous system activates in response. So they become more alert, they become more tense, they potentially begin to pull towards the trigger or just start to scan more intensely because you've noticed it, but they might not have done at that point. So they might be walking behind a car and you've seen over the car that there's a dog over the road coming around the corner and they haven't spotted it yet, but they sense that there potentially is something about to happen because you've gone, oh, and you've tensed up, you've gone, oh God, there's something about to happen. So you feel them change and brace harder. They feel you brace and activate further. And by the time you reach the trigger, both of you are already as, like, at a much higher level of activation than either of you started at. And you can see how the loop is affecting. So you're affecting them, they're affecting you, you're affecting them, they're affecting you. And you're just constantly going around like that. That loop that most reactive dog parents know is, you're going to be saying, yep, that's absolutely what happens. And I can resonate with that as a reactive dog mom too. And it's like the one that makes reactive walk so exhausting, because you're not just managing your dog's reaction here. You're both navigating a shared state that's been building between the both of you. So my story, I experienced it with Maisie a little bit. She was a little bit like this, but more so with Bonnie. And I experienced it at the time when I found it really difficult to understand. So I couldn't work out why certain walks, like, Maisie was a little bit reactive to some scenarios. She had more dogs coming and trying to kind of go for her than anything else, bless her. But Bonnie, I just couldn't work out why certain walks were just so much harder than others when our environment seemed similar. So we were walking in the same places. It might be sometimes the same dogs as well. But then I started to notice, once I started to kind of say, okay, I need to understand, and started to learn a little bit more, I started to notice the hard walks were almost always the ones where I'd arrived at that door already carrying something. So I was more aware, starting to become more aware of what I was doing in this situation and how I was feeling from the day, how full my stress bucket was, how I felt going out on the walk. Was I just thinking, oh, I've just got to walk the dogs right now because I haven't walked them yet and I've got to get it done and I've just got so much stuff going on, but I've just got to do it. What that was telling my own brain was, I'm already stressed and this is potentially going to add more to it. And that was exactly what it was telling my dog as well when I was preparing to leave the house. So the situation hadn't changed, but I was already anticipating the worst before we'd gone. And Bonnie hadn't changed and Maisie hadn't changed in those moments, but what I was bringing to that walk had changed. And we've got to think about individual scenarios here as well. So my stress bucket was full. My individual stress bucket was full. How full was Bonnie's and Maisie's on those walks was going to vary as well. So I was bringing a fuller stress bucket, which isn't going to help. They're potentially coming at it from a fuller stress bucket too. So you can see how it's all kind of working hand in hand. And she was responding to that because that's what she was designed to do. She was designed to read me. Dogs were with us way back when. You know, they've evolved to really understand us, like I already said, and really start to work closely with us. And they've got to understand what our signals are telling them, subtle signals that we potentially don't even know we're giving. We've got to un like they've got to understand what they mean, so that they can read us and start to do what they feel they need to do in response. So I can give that's the escalation loop that we don't want to happen. But the de-escalating version of the same loop is possible. So you spot a trigger, you exhale, you deliberately drop your shoulders, you soften the grip on the lead, you bring your attention into your body just for a second. All this stuff is happening in a very short space of time. Your dog potentially is going to register that change in you. So the absence of a brace signal. So dogs are pattern driven. They will spot a pattern. So if you tense up on that lead, and the grip tightens and their lead feels more tense, they're going to potentially take that as a signal of something is in the environment that I really need to be aware of. So if we do the opposite and loosen that grip on the lead, and yes, we can still be holding it really tightly, but not be showing that tension into the lead, into our dog's body, that is softening the energy coming down the lead to your dog. Your dog's nervous system is going to get slightly different information as a result. So the person is still here and they're still feeling steady. And their threshold, the point at which they're going to tip into a full reaction, is probably going to then be a little higher than it would have been. So that's the de-escalating co-regulation loop that we are here with you. We're safe. I feel okay. I want you to feel okay as well. And that's where, again, the pattern is your dog's lead's not tense, tensing up, so they're not going to escalate as a result of just feeling that tension. So there, like that is, it's not perfect, it's not guaranteed, but it's very real and it's very cumulative. So if you do that more and more, your dog's recovery is potentially going to improve the more you do it. So I remember a walk with Bonnie where I consciously tried to do this for the first time. So this was very early in our reactivity journey. We'd been having a few hard weeks up until this point, and I was aware of how braced I was becoming on walks, preemptively tensing, like even before anything had really happened. So I'd be kind of saying, "Oh, there's a person," or "Oh, I heard a noise. What was that?" and bracing for it. So I started to make a deliberate decision on that walk on that day. Once I'd started to learn and understand and build that awareness and all the things, like all the things that I've got with me now in my toolkit, I made a deliberate decision on that walk to keep checking in with my own body. So the exhale, the shoulders, the grip. And she was noticeably different. So it wasn't a transformation. I never say that one, like changing one thing is gonna and it happening once is gonna transform everything. But there was more calm there. And I found that we were working on engagement and focus and that kind of thing as well. And she was just offering that naturally to me without me having to prompt it, which was a good signal for me to say that she was feeling like she could do that in that moment. So what I also found was she was more able to recover after a difficult moment. So yeah, she would have still reacted, but I was finding that recovery was faster. So moving through that walk in a way that just felt like less of a battle, that is co-regulation working totally in your favor. And that's what I want you guys to learn to be able to do. And it takes time, it takes practice, and it takes consistency. And it's not easy. I will never say anything is easy. Simple steps, yes, absolutely, but not necessarily easy. And you might need help to get to that point as well. You might need that support to be able to kind of hit some of those goals that you want to achieve. So knowing all of this, what do you actually do differently? So I've summed it up in four things that work with the co-regulation route rather than against it that you can take away and use on a practical sense. So the first one is start before you leave the house. I go through this a lot with clients about, so if they've got something going on outside the house, their dog loves food in the house but won't take food outside, that's a big signal for me that there is something going on out there. There's overstimulation, there's fear, there's worry, there's stress, whatever it is, there is a big signal there that something's happening. Their dogs are pulling on the lead from as soon as they walk out the door, and I start from what's happening before they leave the house in that scenario. Their dog's really vigilant when they leave the house, what's happening before they leave, like all these things. So when your dog's already reading you and your nervous system's already setting the tone for the walk, like I mentioned with how I was feeling when I was approaching walks with Bonnie, before you go out, take 60 seconds. Doesn't have to be a performance or anything like that. It can become a little ritual, whatever you want to term. Like, I've heard the word ritual used before, which is, it's got different connotations for different people, but for this kind of sense, it's just a go-to thing. So, a genuine pause. So, one exhale through the mouth if you can. So, inhale through the nose, out through the mouth for longer. Check your shoulders. Check your jaw, is it really clenched? And I'm a jaw clencher, so I do mention that because you're not consciously doing that until you realise that you are. Somebody points out that that's potentially what's happening, you go, oh yeah, okay, my jaw is so clenched right now. Unclench that jaw. Notice if you're already carrying anticipatory tension about the walk. You don't have to resolve that tension before you leave, you just need to notice it. That awareness alone is going to begin to shift the signal you're sending. And your dog who's watching you get ready is starting to receive that shift. So if you're like leaving in a hurry, if you've got time constraints and you feel you have to get from point A to point B to point C in the time that you have, slow things down. Don't feel that you have to get to point C. Maybe you only get to point B, but you're much slower and you're feeling more regulated as a result. Your dog's done more sniffing. You've been able to exhale more. Like, all that stuff is going to really impact. So before you leave the house, do those things and start to just see what happens when you start to make some shifts and have that awareness of what tension you're bringing to the walk before you've even left. Number two, regulate through your body, not your mind. Now, as somebody who is, in a past life, an analyst in my corporate world, I was an analyst of lots of different things. Won't go into the boring detail of what I was doing, but I'm somebody who is very mind-driven. I'm academic, I read, like, everything is mind-based. And I think that's where I always felt blocks. And starting to learn actually the body is a signal here, and the body's like way more important, if not, I'll say just as important as what your mental, like what your brain's doing, like all this stuff. I've done all the work to get to the point where actually I read what my body is telling me. So this is not a simple thing necessarily for everybody to do, because as somebody who has used her mind in all aspects and been pretty switched off to what her body was telling her, I can relate to how this might not be simple. So now I know it's one of the most important things they actually teach, and it does go against most people's instincts because it went against mine completely. So I can get it. I do get it if you kind of say, well, I'm not going to find this easy. But when something stressful happens on a walk, I just want you to give it a go. I want you to try and see what happens. It doesn't matter if it doesn't go perfectly. It didn't go perfectly for me either, and it still doesn't. But I do what I can because I've got that awareness. So when a trigger appears or reaction is beginning, the instinct is to think your way through it, to remind yourself of the training, to run through what you're supposed to do, to tell yourself to calm down. Absolutely, yeah, remember the training that you've gone through, because that's going to help you as well, but none of it is going to potentially happen fast enough. Regulation through the body is a faster starting point here, so that one exhale, dropping your shoulders, unclenching the jaw that you did before you left the house, are physical shifts that speak directly to your nervous system, and then they're going to transmit down that lead. So if you've got awareness that you are tensed up and you're kind of bracing, you can just go, oh, okay, Take that breath out, drop the shoulders, do all of that. Like, notice how tense everything is. Oh, yeah, there is tension in my dog's lead. Let's just loosen that tension a little bit as well. Those physical shifts are going to speak directly to your dog's nervous system there. So this is actually what we practiced in episode 44. So that window of time before your dog reacts. So the body first regulation is pretty much the same skill, and it works here as well. And the more you practice it, the more likely in a low stakes moment, so when things aren't like in the heat of the moment, the more available it is going to become when you do really need it. So I always recommend to clients, anybody that I work with, start simple, in a simple location, in a place where, like, when I work with reactivity, I don't go straight from the first session outside unless I think the client has enough tools and has worked on enough of these things that the dog can cope with what's going to happen outside the door. I don't start sessions out working on reactivity from session one. I work on the things that are going to help them beforehand. In these moments before reactivity happens, we want our dog to know some of these skills, and they're just not going to know them. And going out is and not having these things is going to set everybody up for failure. So the more you practice in low stakes settings, so in the house, in the garden, at the beginning, where there isn't these heightened things going on, the more available it is definitely going to become when you do really need it. Because you've practiced it, your body's going to say, oh, I know how to respond to this. And your brain will just switch it on much faster because you've been practicing in those situations that aren't super, super stressful. If you only try and do this when there is a big stress happening, it's going to take a lot longer. So episode 44, I'm going to link it in the show notes. Give it a listen if you haven't already, about like what to do in that window of time, because there is a window of time before your dog reacts to anything in any scenario. So go listen to that if you haven't already. But that's what this is kind of alluding to. Point three, notice what your dog does for you. So co-regulation, as I've said, is bi-directional, which means your dog is also regulating you if you let them. When your dog sniffs, their own parasympathetic activation can begin to settle your nervous system as well, if you're paying attention. So that just basically means them regulating themselves in a calming moment can help you to calm your nervous system too, if we are aware of what our dogs are doing. Because it's really easy to go out on a walk and say, I'm going to listen to something, and be switched into that mode, but you're switching off to what your dog's doing in that scenario. Or you like go on a phone call, so I'm just going to ring so and so and check up on them, and we're kind of doing two things in one here. We're going out for a dog walk, but I'm just going to ring my mate or my sister or whoever, my mum, my dad, just for a catch up for the time that I'm out. But what that means is, when we think about what I've just said, noticing what your dog's doing for you, you're not going to be noticing it. You'll be noticing when they go for a poo to pick it up, but that's probably about it. So it doesn't have to be every walk, but noticing what your dog's doing in those moments is going to help you to co-regulate just as much as you can help them. So when they shake off after a difficult moment, or when they find a spot that they want to investigate, or when they settle beside you, so it doesn't have to be out on a walk, it can be at home, those moments are invitations to come back down together. Most people are so focused on managing their dog during and after those difficult moments that they miss those natural de-escalation points. But they're there. Your dog is not only a source of stress on a walk, there can also be, if you follow their lead sometimes, a source of regulation. So just a little point to take away. If you are somebody who is switching off from your dog, it's such a normal thing to do because you think, I'm going to do this and that at the same time. You might be regulating yourself through whatever it is you're listening to. You could be listening to something that's like helping you to regulate, but being switched off from your dog in that moment if they need you is good, because it's bi-directional. You might struggle then to have that co-regulation loop building in a de-escalating way because you're switched off from them until something big happens. So it's just a little takeaway for you to think about. And number four, repair after the hard moments. So when things do go wrong, so the reaction happens, when the walk was difficult, when both of you have come home really activated and just a bit wired, so I like to use the word wired, the repair really does matter. So it doesn't have to be a debrief of what went wrong. It doesn't have to be a training analysis. It can just be a quiet moment of reconnection. So sitting with your dog for 5 minutes after a hard walk, there's no agenda, there's no phone, just the two of you letting the nervous systems come back down together. So you could give them a chew, for example. They could have their chew on their mat or in their bed, and you just sit near them, and they're calming them, their own nervous system through that regulation activity of chewing. So something that's going to last them a little bit of time, not just like a dentist sticks or something really quick. Something that's going to last them, you know, about 10, 15 minutes at least, just to help them. And you sit there and you don't go onto your phone, you have a cup of tea, you just sit and be with them. That's going to make a massive difference. And the 5 minute debrief from episode 40 can be part of this as well. So even simpler than that, just being with them. So I'm going to link episode 40 in the show notes as well. The 5 minute debrief is a really, really good, useful tool that I recommend you do to help switch you off from difficult walks in terms of it following on to the next walk or the next day. So I want it to be where it's not affecting walk after walk after walk. The 5 minute debrief just helps you just to say, this is the scenario. This is my debrief of what happened, and not again a training analysis, but it just helps you to move forward. So it's even simpler than that step, just being with them quietly, letting the shared calm be the thing that closes that loop that we don't want to happen. Over time, this is going to build something. It's going to teach both of you that difficult moments don't end in disconnection, they end in repair. And that safety is one of the most regulating things a relationship can offer. So those are my four things to give to you, practical steps that you can do just to help you in those moments. And I want to close with something that I think's worth sitting with. Co-regulation means that you're never just walking your dog. You're in a relationship with them in the most fundamental nervous system sense. Your presence is not neutral. Your state isn't invisible. You are, like all the moments that you're with them, either contributing to their felt sense of safety or their sense of activation, so that escalation, de-escalation. Not because of what you do, but because of what you are. I know that can feel like pressure, especially for dog parents who are already hard on themselves, because I am a dog mum who has been hard on myself so many times about my dog's behaviour. But I want you to hear it differently when I say this. It's not pressure, it's power, it's empowerment. I want it to mean that the work that you do on your own nervous system, the regulation, the self-compassion, the building of steadiness, is directly your dog's work too. When you get calmer, things just start to feel calmer generally. And this isn't, again, as a reminder, we can't be calm 100% of the time, but we can come back to a place of regulation after difficult moments. And that's what I mean when I talk about this. When you develop that capacity to come back from that difficult moment more quickly, your dog is going to benefit from that. They are definitely going to benefit from that. When you show up to the walk from a place of genuine presence rather than raced anticipation like I used to do it with Bonnie, they're going to feel that. You are not just trying to manage your dog's nervous system or your own here. You're trying to, like, in doing all of the things that you're doing, it's some of the most important things that you can do for them. So you're trying to manage situations to help your nervous system and theirs in this moment. So that is where nervous system aware dog parenting comes from. It's what it actually means. It's not just a set of techniques. It's a way of understanding that the relationship between you and your dog begins inside you just as much as it begins inside them. So the next time you and your dog wind each other up on a walk, I really hope you'll remember this. It's not failure, it's the loop that you're in. And the loop can run in either direction, the co-regulation loop. You have got so much more influence than you think, not through control, but through presence. And if this episode's given you something useful, so it might have been that something shifted about how you see what's happening between you and your dog, I really would love it if you would share it with someone else who needs it. So send it to a dog parent who's stuck in that loop and does, like, you just don't think they've got the words for it yet. Post it somewhere, it might reach them. You're sharing this podcast is how other overwhelmed dog parents find it, genuinely. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, a 2-minute review will make so much difference. If you search for The Mindful Dog Parent, scroll down and leave a rating. It just means more than I can say. It just shows more visible to dog parents who really need it. And I think so many dog parents need it because I hear this stuff being talked about so often. And if you're ready to go deeper into the nervous system work for yours and your dog's nervous systems together with a proper framework and real support, the Dog Parent Path is where all that lives. Find out more at thedogparentpath.com, and I have a free 1-minute, 60-second reset tool that you can use in those moments when you really need it. So if you've had a difficult walk, if you've really struggled with your dog in a particular moment, doesn't have to be out on a walk, it can be any kind of scenario where you're just struggling with your dog. My 60-second reset tool, it's interactive. It's there to guide you in two different ways, depending on how best you are gonna, how best you absorb information. So there is an audio talk through of the 60-second reset with me talking you through it in the moment, or there is just a little interactive tool that you can use and it will go through every step with you as you do it. And it's literally 60 seconds. That's it. It's a reset. It will help you recover from that difficult moment. So go check that out. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. It is completely free, and I really hope that you can use it time and time again when you need it. So take care of yourself this week, and I shall see you in the next episode. Thanks so much for tuning in to The Mindful Dog Parent. If this episode gave you something to think about, or it just made you feel a little less alone, I would love it if you followed the show and shared it with another dog parent who needs it. You'll find all the links and resources mentioned in the show notes at lavendergardenanimalservices.co.uk/podcast, and I would love to stay in touch, so head there if you want to explore more ways to work with me or get support.